Dr. Linda buy it?
I might have laid it on a little thick, Taylor told Copano and the others. But I think I definitely got across how much I hate it here. Hinted that I liked it better when I was with the Foundation. Lexa tapped her computer screen. Linda already filed her incident report. She mentions that you're feeling isolated and angry. Conveniently leaves out any mention of the Foundation.
All we can do now is wait for them to approach you again, Nine said.
I hope it happens soon, Taylor replied, pushing a hand through her hair. It's not easy being disruptive and grumpy all the time. She looked at Nigel. I don't know how you do it.
Hey, disruptive maybe, but I am not grumpy.
What if they don't come for Taylor? Ran asked. What if we've been wrong about Dr. Linda?
We are not wrong about Linda, Nigel stated.
Nine blew out a sigh and glanced over his shoulder at their board of leads and suspects.
Then we keep hunting, keep digging, until we find another way in.
And if the Foundation does come? Caleb asked, with a sidelong look at Taylor.
We're sure it'll be safe.
The hero's journey is never totally safe,
Copano interjected, putting one of his hands on Taylor's shoulder.
But she can handle it.
Taylor looked up at him and rolled her eyes.
God, you're corny.
Malcolm leaned forward to answer Caleb.
We've taken precautions. We'll be prepared this time.
What about the other Lorik? Caleb asked. Couldn't they help with this?
Six is doing what she can, Nine said. As for John, Marina, and Ella, I don't know what the hell they've been up to. Some secret project. We're on our own.
I thought there were others, Copano said.
No, Nine replied brusquely. All the others are dead.
The meeting broke up shortly after that, the students leaving in a trickle to sneak back to the dorms. Even though Taylor had to wake up early for chores, she'd lost track of how much extra cleaning she was being forced to do for punishment. She lingered in the basement until only she and Professor Nine remained.
Something on your mind? He asked.
Taylor looked down at her hands.
It's hard, you know? Pretending I don't like it here. Acting like I hate my friends. I don't actually mean any of that stuff.
We know that, Cook.
But sometimes I feel so angry. Like really angry, Taylor continued. And I'm worried that I'm screwing my whole life up for nothing.
We're doing the right thing, Nine replied.
He put a hand on her shoulder, realized it was his cold, mechanical one, and switched it up.
The world will be a better place when we're finished, Taylor. I promise. It'll all work out.
She looked up at him, uncertainty in her eyes.
It better.
Chapter 7. Taylor Cook. The Human Guard Academy. Point Reyes, California. A key part of the Fugitive Six's plan had nothing to do with the Academy. It was the piece that made Taylor feel sick to her stomach whenever she thought about it, especially since she was the one to suggest the idea. She had made it happen. If their plan failed to bust the Foundation, she'd have sacrificed a lot for nothing. And the sacrifices weren't all hers. About a month ago, her dad had come to visit.
You sure you want to do this? Professor Nine had asked.
Taylor took a deep breath, steeling herself.
I'm sure I want to get the Foundation. But this part of it?
She shook her head.
No, I'm not sure at all.
It was the Tuesday after Thanksgiving. Taylor bit her lip, thinking about how she'd almost forgotten to call her dad last week. When she first came to the academy, she'd called him every chance she got. As she settled in and got used to her strange situation, Taylor scaled back the calls to like once a week. And then, well, she obviously couldn't call her dad from Iceland, where she'd been kidnapped to. But even after that, she was calling less.
"How much did you tell him?" Nine asked. "About what happened to you?"
"You probably already know. Don't you guys record all those conversations?"
"You think I want to listen to that shit?" Nine scoffed. "Not enough hours in the day."
The two of them sat on a picnic table in the visitation area outside the academy. There were a few quaint little cottages spread out here, all of them stocked with food and board games and outdoor activities like baseball gloves and frisbees. The area gave off a campground vibe. It reeked of normalcy. That is, if one didn't look south, to where the UN peacekeepers kept their barracks, an assortment of military-grade trucks, and even a tank parked there. This is where parents came to visit. Tours of the academy itself were possible, but because of security concerns, they were rarely approved. Taylor sometimes wondered whether the administration was trying to protect the academy's secrets from the parents, or protect the fragile human parents from the volatile guard housed there. Probably a little of both.
"I haven't told him anything," Taylor said to Nine. "What would I say? That I got kidnapped by some psycho-rich people, then rescued, and some of my friends almost died? That these same kidnappers got back in contact with me by hiding a letter in with the one sent from my old school? That they want me back like I just finished a summer internship or something, and I'm a top recruit? That I actually want to take them up on their offer, so that I can be like an undercover agent? That these Foundation monsters are probably watching him and might try to use him as leverage?" "No." Taylor took a breath. "Of course I didn't say anything."
"For the best," Nine grunted.
Taylor frowned.
"I used to tell him everything. The first thing I ever hid from my dad was my legacies, and that barely lasted a week."
She shook her head.
"It's weird. He can tell I'm holding something back."
Nine fiddled with the joints on his cybernetic hand. Taylor watched him out of the corner of her eye. She hadn't known Nine for long, but already Taylor recognized how he could get awkward and flustered whenever he tried to go into heart-to-heart mode.
"It can be tough when parents are involved," Nine said. "I mean, I wouldn't know, personally, but I can imagine." "We don't have to do this part. Not if you don't want to."
Taylor pushed a hand through her hair.
"It'll be temporary," she said. "That's what I keep telling myself."
"Right," Nine said. "Your dad sounds like a cool dude. He'd probably be proud if he knew what you were doing."
"Proud and freaked out. Or miserable and lonely. Maybe all the above."
Taylor rubbed her forearm, feeling the skin where there should have been a scar. She'd had a minor surgery last week, performed by Lexa and Dr. Good under the training center. She had healed the wound herself, but it still felt off.
"That feel okay?" Nine asked.
"Yeah, just weird, I guess."
Nine flexed his metal arm.
"You'll get used to it."
Some movement on the road leading into the barracks drew Taylor's attention. It was beyond strange to see her dad's dented brown pickup truck rolling through a security checkpoint. The context was all wrong. Taylor stood up, feeling a little dazed.
"I'll be over here if you need me to, hop in and be all official or whatever," Nine said.
"I'm good, thanks,"
Taylor replied over her shoulder, crossing the grass to where her dad had parked. There he was. Her dad looked a little road-weary, his beard grown in, his hair messy, but he grinned when he saw Taylor. She ran the last few steps to him, and he wrapped her in a hug, smoothed her hair down, and kissed her forehead. For a minute, Taylor felt like a little girl again. Her dad held her out at arm's length.
"Look at you. Wow."
"Come on, Dad," she said. "It hasn't been that long."
"I know, I know. But you've changed," he replied, studying her. "Can't quite say how, exactly. It's good, though. You look like, well, like a young lady I'd choose to protect the planet, I suppose."
"Oh, stop," Taylor said. She took her dad by the elbow. "You hungry? All these cabins have food. I could make you something."
Her dad took a deep breath and puffed out his chest.
"Feels good to stretch my legs, actually. Air is nice out here. I've never been to California."
So they walked around the grounds. The academy and the surrounding barracks and visitors center were built on a former nature preserve, so there were plenty of woodsy trails for them to hike along. She told him about her classes, her training of her powers at the hospital, and about her friends. All things that they'd covered before on her phone calls, back when they were more regular. In turn, he brought her up to speed on the dreadfully mundane lives of her cousins, on the TV shows they used to watch together, and on the condition of the farm.
"Those harvesters really tore up the fields," he said. "Kind of ironic. They'd make terrible farmers." He shook his head. "The government was nice enough to clear away all the wreckage they left behind, but they still set me back some. Figure if I tighten my belt and subsist on microwave dinners for the winter, I should get through well enough."
"You're already hurting for money," Taylor mumbled, half in thought.
"Well, I wouldn't say I'm hurting. Just going to be a lean season."
"No, Dad. It's okay. In fact, it's great."
Her dad raised an eyebrow.
"I don't follow."
By then, the two of them had done a full circuit of a trail and returned to the main visitors area. Nine was still hanging out by the picnic tables. He gave Taylor a discreet nod when she glanced in his direction. Everything was all set. Taylor took her dad by the elbow and led him towards one of the cabins.
"Come on, I'll explain in here," she said, "where it's private."
"Don't seem any more private in here than out there,"
her dad observed once they were inside. The cabin was simple and cozy. A sofa and some chairs, a dining table, a selection of movies, none of which were rated higher than PG-13 or had anything to do with aliens. And, of course, there was a security camera in one corner. That's what her dad was focused on, his hands on his hips. The setup reminded Taylor of Einar's cabin in Iceland. Perfectly comfortable and seemingly normal, but never unobserved.
"Yeah, those things are everywhere," Taylor said, looking at the camera too.
She covered her mouth as if she were yawning and whispered,
"Just act normal for a second."
"Normal," her dad replied. "I thought I was acting normal."
Taylor grimaced as her dad failed to follow her lead on the secretive whispering, but just then, the red recording light on the security camera blinked twice. That was the signal. She exhaled and turned to her dad.
"Okay, we aren't being watched anymore."
Taylor's dad glanced from her to the camera and back. Taylor expected total bafflement, but instead she got her dad's bemused squint, the same one he used on a farmhand that tried to cut corners.
"So," he said, "now you're going to tell me what's going on with you, right?"
"You could tell, huh?"
"Of course I could tell. I'm your dad. You might be a guard now with problems that I can't even begin to understand, but that doesn't mean I don't know when something's gnawing at you."
Taylor bit the inside of her cheek.
"The thing is, there's only so much I can tell you. For your own good."
"For my own good,"
he repeated, then lowered himself into one of the kitchen chairs.
Gosh, I better sit down for this. My daughter's gone and become a secret agent.
Taylor couldn't help but smile at that. If he only knew. The truth was, there was only so much Taylor wanted to tell her dad. It was probably better that he didn't know she'd been kidnapped, or that she was trying to return to those same kidnappers.
There are some bad people outside the academy. Worse than the Harvesters, even. Taylor began slowly.
She had rehearsed this speech earlier, but was still carefully choosing her words.
They see people like me, guard, as commodities. It's like they want to get a monopoly on us and then charge high prices for our services. And they don't care who gets hurt in the process.
A deep frown set in across her dad's face.
Always comes down to money in this world, don't it? I imagine you'd be in high demand, being a healer and all. Some people see the miraculous and are like, hell, how can I turn a buck off this?
Yeah, exactly, Taylor replied. My professor, you saw him out there.
Number 9. Of course I saw him.
Taylor raised an eyebrow, so her dad explained.
I've been doing my research on the people taking care of my daughter. 9. He's the wild one.
He's chilled out a lot, Taylor said with a shrug. Anyway, he thinks these people are going to try to recruit me to their organization. He thinks they might even have spies in the academy. We want one of their people to approach me so that we can expose them.
Her dad rubbed his jaw.
These people sound dangerous, Taylor.
I know, but...
I'm sorry. You don't need to explain, her dad said, interrupting her. I just broke a promise to myself.
You what?
I promised myself that, no matter what you told me, because I knew it was going to be something, I promised myself that I wouldn't go on about how dangerous it might be. Your life is dangerous now. I saw that firsthand, when those nuts showed up on our doorstep. You'll always be my little girl, and so there's obviously a part of me that'd like nothing better than to drag you back to Turner County, government contracts be damned, lock you up on the farm and keep you safe forever.
Taylor smiled sadly.
There's a part of me that'd like to go.
Her dad wagged a finger at her.
Maybe. But I don't think it's a very big part anymore. And that's okay. I hear it in your voice. You want to get these people.
What they're doing is wrong, Dad, Taylor said, her voice steely. It's disgusting.
Well, I'd hate to be them, on the wrong side of my daughter with her mind made up. You just promise me that you and the other heroes are watching each other's backs.
We're not heroes, Dad, but... yeah, I promise.
Good, her dad said. So, what do you need from me? How can I help?
Taylor looked down at her feet, scuffing the wood floor.
I'm not sure you're going to like it. You can say no.
Lay it on me.
So the thing is, we need to give these people an in, a reason to approach me, something they can try to bribe me with.
Her dad tilted his head.
Aha! I see. Your poor dad subsisting on hot pockets is something these folks might use as leverage.
Yeah, Taylor replied. Well, it's a start anyway.
1 week later in Turner County, South Dakota, two watchers waited for Brian Cook to drive his junker of a pickup truck down the country road. They were parked on the shoulder, in a nondescript wood-paneled station wagon. Nothing that would stand out. These two were pretty used to hiding in plain sight. "There he is," said the guy in the passenger seat, pointing at Brian's passing truck.
"Right on time," his partner answered.
She sat behind the steering wheel, her blonde hair bundled under a thick woolen hat. If Mr. Cook noticed them there, waiting for him to leave his farm, he didn't acknowledge the fact. She waited until Cook's truck was out of sight, then opened her door.
"Come on, let's go on foot, just in case someone's watching."
Outside the car, the guy rubbed his hands together, breath misting in front of him.
"Geez, could we maybe get a mission somewhere tropical next?"
She smirked at him. "Here," she said, holding out her hand. "You know the drill."
"Never get tired of this, either."
As soon as he took her hand, she turned them both invisible. Six and Sam trudged across frozen mud as they moved away from the highway, eventually crossing into Mr. Cook's fields. 5 minutes later, and the little house Taylor had grown up in came into view, along with the barn. They had it on good authority that the barn was empty of animals. Mr. Cook had sold off his horses and pigs to make ends meet that winter.
"I have to say it," Sam declared. "This is a far cry from saving the world."
Six snorted. "No shit. But Nine says it'll help him with their foundation problem. The guy's cool with it. He knows it's coming. Anything irreplaceable he was supposed to have gotten out of the house." Sam shook his invisible head.
"Just dark days, Six. One day you're defeating a hostile alien race bent on world domination, and the next you're wrecking some poor schmuck's house. Shit. Do they even get tornadoes in winter?"
Six raised her free hand, and the sky over Mr. Cook's barn began to darken.
"They do now."
Chapter 8. Copano Okeke. Suite 440. The Human Guard Academy. Point Reyes, California.
"What about this?" Copano asked.
Copano emerged from his room wearing one of the outfits that his dad had picked out for him back in Lagos, when they'd been flush with cash after Copano first developed his telekinesis. During those days, when he was working security for his father's shady delivery service, his dad had told him he needed to look more stylish. So from the Udo Okeke small-time criminal fashion collection came a black silk shirt tucked into pleated gray pants, the buttons of the shirt unbuttoned just enough to give a sense of Copano's muscles. Copano spun in a 360 and spread out his arms.
"Looks good, right?" he asked hopefully. "Very cool."
Nigel, spread out on the couch in their suite's common room, let loose with a deflating cackle.
"I hate to break this to you, mate, but you look like the bouncer at the world's douchiest nightclub in that get-up. Or at best, like a bloody gangster."
Copano stroked his chin.
"You don't mean that as a compliment?"
"No!"
Copano frowned. He phased through his clothes except for his boxer shorts and let the outfit crumple to the ground, then kicked it into a pile with the other rejects.
"You're putting too much thought into this, brother," Nigel said. "It has to be right," Copano replied. "My father once told me, well, it doesn't make much sense in English. And it's kind of vulgar. But basically, the male peacock..." "Your dad picked out those clothes for you?"
Nigel interrupted. When Copano nodded glumly at him, he went on.
"Then I think we can toss his ideas in the bin, along with any other silk shirts you might got lying about."
Copano had gotten that advice once before. On his last day in Nigeria before taking off for the academy, his mom had told him to leave all his father's wisdom in Africa. His dad was, in fact, an unrepentant hustler whose frequent swings of fortune always kept Copano and his two brothers on the verge of poverty. His mom made things work. Or, as she would say, God provided. That was the thing about Copano's mother. She was very religious. Copano suspected that she harbored beliefs similar to those of the Harvesters, that her own son and his new friends were tainted by the devil. He knew that she prayed for his legacies to be cured. She told him so in her infrequent letters.
"Don't know why you want my advice on this anyway," Nigel grumbled, as he poked a finger through one of the many moth-eaten holes in his thrift store Black Flag tank top. "I'm not exactly the foremost authority on how to dress to impress a bird, eh?"
Still thinking about his parents, Copano replied,
"Wisdom can come from unlikely sources, my friend."
He clapped his hands and grinned.
"You have great style. I always thought so, back when I first saw you in that vision. It was like, this dude here, he is out of a movie. No one can be that cool."
Nigel smirked.
"What kind of movie?"
"You know, one of those British ones where everyone is a robber and talks fast and shoots each other."
"Yeah," Nigel replied, nodding.
"Yeah, cool. I'll take it. But maybe you should stop thinking about movies and appearances and all that, and just try to look normal. Taylor seems like she appreciates normal."
Copano snapped his fingers.
"See? What did I tell you? Good advice."
Copano stepped through the wall and back into his room, once again rummaging through his closet. He pulled on a worn pair of blue jeans and a green waffle-knit sweater. It's what he would have worn if this was any other day, and not Christmas Eve when he had something special planned. It seemed low effort, but...
"Not bad,"
Nigel said when Copano returned to the common room.
"At least you look like yourself, and like you aren't trying to impress anybody." "But I am trying to impress her," Copano replied.
Nigel closed his eyes and massaged his eyelids.
"Oi! But you don't want her to know you're trying to impress her."
Copano flopped down in a chair across from Nigel.
"You know, if you'd just asked Ran for me, told you, I'm not into the wingman thing," Nigel replied. "I ask Ran to ask Taylor if she'd be interested if Copano came courting. Next thing, we're in one of those boring Jane Austen novels, eh? No, not for me. I'm staying neutral in all this."
Copano squinted at his friend. Back in Lagos, any one of Copano's boys would have been happy to talk him up to a girl he liked. It was expected. Of course, Nigel was much, much different from his friends back home. This wasn't the first time Nigel had mentioned remaining neutral. Copano still didn't understand what exactly he meant. Who did Nigel have to stay neutral for? It's not like Copano was in some kind of war. Before Copano could say anything more, the door to Caleb's room opened, and he came out with a duffel bag tossed over one shoulder. He nodded to them both, and set the bag down with a sigh. Caleb had been much more social since they'd all run off together and nearly gotten killed. Copano had also noticed a sharp decline in the amount of behind-closed-doors conversations Caleb had with his various duplicates. Despite the newfound friendliness, Caleb always seemed to get quiet when Copano would bring up his crush on Taylor. Copano had heard that some Americans could be kind of prudish. He chalked it up to that. And anyway, it struck Copano that Caleb had a lot on his mind the last few weeks. He was, after all, one of the few students who was allowed to visit home for the holidays, even if just for a couple of days. The Fugitive Six were all still on probation for their escape from campus, so it must have been true what everyone said about Caleb. His uncle, the retired general who helped save the world, got him preferential treatment.
"Guess it's time for me to go," Caleb said with a forlorn look down at his bag.
"Are you excited?"
Copano asked with raised eyebrows, even though it was obvious Caleb was far from it.
When's the last time you saw your family?
Caleb thought about it. After the invasion, I guess. But before the academy opened. He glanced at Nigel. Back when they had us basically quarantined.
Fun times, those, Nigel said dryly. Such a long time, Copano replied. You must miss them.
Caleb thought that over for a second. Actually, I'd kind of gotten used to them not being around. Easier to, I don't know, not think about them.
Shit, my parentals haven't even sent me a holiday card, Nigel said. And that's the way I prefer it.
Are they bad people? Copano asked Caleb.
He knew enough about Nigel's parents from the stories he told about them shuffling him off to boarding school and forgetting about him. But Caleb hardly talked about his family. The only thing Copano really knew was that they were all in the military and very strict.
No, Caleb answered quickly. No, they're fine. They're just...
He shrugged.
It's hard to explain.
I'm jealous, Copano replied. You get to go home and show your family what a tremendous guard you've become. If I was you, I'd be strutting around Nebraska like I owned the place.
Caleb shook his head. I'm not really a... strutter.
You'll be fine, mate, Nigel said,
sounding as sincere as he ever did. He stood up and awkwardly embraced Caleb, which seemed to surprise both of them.
Don't let him get to you. And don't bottle anything up. That's when the trouble starts, eh?
Yeah, it's only a couple of days, Caleb reminded himself. Anyway, what are you guys going to do for the holiday break?
4 whole days without classes. Oh, Professor Nine, so generous. Nigel replied. Probably sleep a bunch. Maybe work on my guitar?
He said that last bit with a wink at Caleb, and the duplicator smiled back conspiratorially. Copano knew the two of them were working on some music project upstairs in the empty suites, but he hadn't been asked to join, so he didn't stick his nose in.
I am going to cook Christmas rice, Copano declared. And if I'm lucky, some romance.
Nigel clapped a hand over Copano's face.
Never say that again.
Caleb swallowed, looking at them.
Oh, you hanging out with, Taylor?
Copano nodded.
If everything goes as planned,
Caleb?
Caleb's face had gone literally blurry. Like a transparent copy had been placed over him, but not quite lined up. It was a duplicate trying to emerge from his body. Caleb squinted, and before the clone could pop fully loose, it evaporated like a ghost. Copano and Nigel eyed him as he scratched sheepishly at the back of his neck.
Nerves, I guess, Caleb explained.
He glanced at the wall clock and picked up his bag.
I better get going. You know how security gets when you keep the helicopter waiting.
Happy Christmas, Copano yelled,
and wrapped Caleb up in a hug, slapping his back.
Yeah, Caleb replied. You too.
The week before, Copano had been aghast when he'd first seen the dining hall's holiday menu. A boring turkey dinner? Basically the same turkey dinner they had served a month ago for American Thanksgiving. That wouldn't do at all.
Where is the rice? Copano asked anyone who would listen. How can they not serve Christmas rice?
Most of the other students looked baffled when he complained about the rice, but Dr. Chen had taken an interest. Copano was in her cultural relativity seminar that semester. The class was meant to help them understand the wide variety of UN communities they'd be assisting once they were full-fledged Earth Guard. Everyone needed to take it before graduating.
"This might be a good opportunity to learn about each other's cultures," she said. "I could probably arrange something with the kitchen staff."
And she had. Over the last week, students were allowed to file ingredient requests and sign up for time in the kitchen, where they could then prepare a traditional dish from their homeland that would be shared by the other students on Christmas. Doing so was good for extra credit in Dr. Chen's class, assuming they also gave a short presentation on the food's significance.
"Psh, extra credit," Isabella had rolled her eyes when Copano told her about the concept. "What does that matter? Like these silly grades will ever mean anything."
But not everyone was as cynical as Isabella. A handful of other students signed up for kitchen time, including some who weren't even in Dr. Chen's class. Christmas Eve was Copano's turn in the kitchen. He was happy to take one of the later slots, when things would be quiet and peaceful. Conveniently, after her staged altercation with Isabella, Copano knew that Taylor would be just finishing up her shift cleaning the dining hall, not long after he was to begin. So, Copano worked slowly. In one pot, he cooked a whole chicken seasoned with curry, thyme, and onions. Next to that, he fried up two purple slices of beef liver, which would get cubed up and added to the rice. The chewy bits of meat were always Copano's favorite part of the dish, but some of the other students in class had made grossed-out faces when he mentioned liver.
"That kind of reaction," Dr. Chen explained, "is exactly why we have this class."
Still, Copano wanted to get the liver part done before Taylor showed up. He didn't want to gross her out. Copano looked over his shoulder to where the gift he'd gotten for Taylor sat on a clean counter, far enough away to avoid catching any grease spatters. He swallowed back his nerves, worried again that she would think it was stupid. His romance advisor Nigel probably would have called it lame, which was why Copano had made a point of not showing him. While the liver cooked, Copano let his eyes wander to the dishes his classmates had made. Most of them had gone with desserts. Simon, the French guy who could transfer his knowledge through objects, apparently had some secret pastry chef skills. He'd made something called La Bouche de Noël. It looked to Copano like a giant ho-ho surrounded by little mushrooms made of frosting. He started to pick a piece of frosting loose from the top, but turned his hand transparent at the last second, resisting the urge. What would it look like if Taylor came in and found him scarfing down all these desserts? Well, maybe they could just turn it into her latest act of rebellion. Ever since this plan to infiltrate the Foundation kicked off, Copano had been seeing less of Taylor. He knew that she needed to seem isolated, even from the other Fugitive Six, if they were going to convince the Foundation to approach her again. The shady organization had to think it was their idea, like they were rescuing Taylor from a life she hated. But that didn't make it easier for Copano. He and Taylor had arrived at the academy together, had always relied on each other. It was easy to forget that Taylor was just acting, and to start to feel like they'd really drifted apart. And what would happen if this plan actually worked? The Foundation would take Taylor, and then... what? Copano would be stuck back at the academy, with nothing to do but hope things turned out okay. Professor Nine insisted they had agents in the field who could watch over Taylor, people he trusted, but that didn't make Copano feel much better. It was a dangerous idea, one he probably wouldn't have gone along with if it hadn't been Taylor's plan to begin with. Copano was deep in thought, chopping onions and occasionally wiping his runny eyes on his shoulder sleeve, when a voice startled him.
"I always knew you were a big softy, but those are a lot of tears."
Taylor stood in the doorway, watching him with a tired smile. She wore a plaid shirt with the sleeves rolled up, and a tank top along with a form-fitting pair of jeans. Her blonde hair was held back by a bandana. even though she was pushing a bucket of dirty water with a mop. The sight of Taylor made Copano's mouth go dry. She looked beautiful, even when she'd spent the last few hours cleaning up spilled food.
"It's the onions," he insisted with a defiant sniffle. "The onions, I swear."
"Uh-huh," Taylor replied. She used her telekinesis to send her mop and bucket into the adjacent supply closet, then wandered over to Copano.
"What kind of weird cookies are you making that have onions in them?"
"I'm not making cookies," Copano answered with a dismissive wave of his knife. "I'm making Christmas rice."
"Oh, everybody else made desserts."
Taylor poked around one of the nearby shelves, stuck her hand under a piece of wax paper, and pulled out a chunk of baklava.
"You think just because now you're the Academy's resident bad girl, you can raid the kitchen whenever you want and devour the hard work of your classmates, eh?"
Taylor chewed thoughtfully.
"Yep. You want one?"
"Obviously."
Taylor reached back to the tray and pulled out another cookie, then floated it out in front of Copano's face.
"You know," Taylor began with a crafty smile, "Isabella says you're one of my stalkers."
About to bite into the cookie, Copano let out a sharp cough and had to turn his head away. He took a moment to compose himself while Taylor tried to stifle laughter. Whenever he was embarrassed, it was Copano's strategy to bull forward with humor and bluster. He'd picked that up from his dad.
"Why would she say such a thing?"
Copano asked with hammed-up offense. He plucked the cookie out of the air and popped it into his mouth. Taylor shrugged playfully.
"I don't know. Because you have a habit of popping up? Like after I made that scene in chemistry class and had to help Professor Burroughs inventory the supplies, you just happened to develop a sudden interest in obscure chemical compounds."
"That was for practice,"
Copano exclaimed. He waved his hand back and forth to demonstrate.
"I wanted to see if there were any substances I couldn't pass through. Serious science stuff."
"Uh-huh," Taylor replied. "A likely story."
Copano pretended to be sullen and went back to chopping his onions. That Isabella always had a way of saying whatever was on her mind, which was usually gossip, or else her many theories about what the other students were secretly feeling or thinking. Most of the time, though, she was right. She had certainly nailed Copano. He had been arranging ways to bump into Taylor around campus. He didn't care that Isabella had called him out. On the contrary, this was good news. It meant she and Taylor were talking about him. Taylor had noticed.
"We used to be able to hang out more," Copano said.
He brushed his chopped onions into a frying pan, where they began to sizzle.
"I know why we can't as much these days. Because you are supposed to be a cynical and angry young lady. Chilling with me would be bad for your reputation. All you would do is laugh and smile all the time, and say things like, 'Oh, Copano, you are so funny and handsome.' This would, of course, blow your cover."
Taylor laughed and smiled, just as Copano had predicted.
"Of course," she replied.
But her face soon clouded over. She glanced at the security camera on the kitchen's wall.
"We have to be careful talking like this."
"I already told Lexa we'd be in here," Copano said.
For cybersecurity reasons cooked up by Professor Nine, all the Academy's surveillance footage, and who accessed it, went through Lexa. That way, if Taylor slipped up or needed a break from playing the bad girl, she wouldn't be caught on camera. Copano had made sure to tell Lexa not to record in the kitchen that night.
"But you're not a stalker," Taylor said dryly, her eyes warm.
"So maybe I have arranged to bump into you here and there,"
Copano continued with an airy wave of his knife that ended with him chopping the stem off a pepper.
"Is this stalking?" I don't even know what this word means, but I think not.
Oh, sure. Play dumb, Taylor said.
She hopped onto a clear section of counter and sat there with her legs dangling.
I'm not complaining. Hiding out together beneath the training center isn't the same as actually hanging out. I've missed it.
Copano flashed a grin.
I still take my pledge to you very seriously. I am dedicated to making your experience here as boring as possible.
Taylor snorted. I think boring has pretty much gone out the window. Thanks for trying, though.
She reached out and pinched Copano's sleeve.
This sweater looks good on you.
For all his attempts at being smooth, he couldn't keep the dumb grin off his face.
Huh? This? Just something old I tossed on.
Chapter 9. Taylor Cook. The Kitchen. The Human Guard Academy. Point Reyes, California. Taylor had built up a tolerance to chores. It came from her old life, when she spent every day after school and most of her summers helping out around the farm. School, chores, homework, sleep. It was a rhythm that Taylor was used to. She could turn off her mind and just get stuff done. When a student got in trouble at the academy, and Taylor had made a point of getting in trouble a lot lately, the administration favored two kinds of punishment. Extra training sessions with Professor Nine, or community service around the campus. Both punishments boiled down to basically the same thing. A loss of free time. Taylor didn't mind that so much. All she did in her free time was worry. So better to have a bunch of dull tasks to take her mind off things. Mopping floors on Christmas Eve, though, that was something that would happen to a desperate orphan in one of those sad British holiday stories. And yet, Taylor had been looking forward to it. Normally, she didn't wear any of her nice outfits when she was going to be spending her off time scrubbing grime out of crevices. But she had a feeling that Copano would show up tonight. Or maybe more than a feeling. A hope. Sitting on the counter beside him, occasionally brushing her shoulder up against his, entirely by accident, of course, Taylor felt at ease. Like she could be herself. Not the old, nervous, homesick Taylor who had first come to the academy, or the angry, revenge-minded Taylor who had emerged after the incident with the Foundation. With Copano, she was in her sweet spot. Perpetually. Copano made her feel comfortable and hopeful. Like they were always on the verge of some great adventure, where things would work out perfectly.
He's hot, Isabella had said to her earlier that day, in their suite, when Taylor mentioned she thought she might see Copano that night.
You should hook up with him. A Christmas miracle.
God, Isabella, it's not always about hooking up, Taylor replied.
Not always, no. But this time?
Isabella wiggled her eyebrows.
This time? Yes. So much yes.
I don't know. I mean, I like him. We're friends. And he's,
I mean, yeah, sure. Objectively, he's an attractive guy. But I don't know if he even likes me that way, and if he did, I don't know if I'd want to mess with the friendship.
Oh, he likes you that way, Isabella said with a smirk.
Please, that you guys haven't done it yet is crazy. Everyone knows it's going to happen.
Isabella? What else is there to do around here? Besides plan our secret war against a bunch of rich assholes? Might as well have some fun.
You've got a one-track mind, Taylor replied with a nervous laugh.
She looked across the suite for help, where Ran was listening with a faint smile. The Japanese girl shrugged.
I agree with Isabella, she said simply.
The memory made Taylor's cheeks warm. the flush luckily covered by the steamy kitchen. Copano stood over the stove, shaking a heavy pan filled with fried rice. There was a light sheen of sweat on his forehead. Without thinking about it, Taylor grabbed a clean towel off the counter and lightly wiped his forehead.
"Ah, thank you,"
he said with that infectious grin of his.
"You make a very good assistant chef."
"Happy to help," she replied, glancing down at his growing vat of fried rice. "With whatever this is."
"Christmas rice,"
Copano declared again.
"You think it's strange, eh? I should have maybe made desserts like all these others, but that's not how we do it in Nigeria."
"You don't have desserts there?" Copano stuck out his stomach and slapped his free hand against it.
"Of course we do. But the rice..."
He tilted his head.
"This story might be boring."
"No, tell me. I like hearing about your home." Copano beamed.
"Before I was born, there was a revolution in my country. My mom and dad were very poor. Dirt poor, you'd say. I guess most people were back then. They would consider themselves lucky if they had a cup of rice to eat for dinner."
"Wow," Taylor replied. "That's terrible."
Copano shrugged. "Terrible, maybe, but it turned into a cool thing in a way. For Christmas, the people who could afford to would make big pots of rice like this one and invite their neighbors over to eat. It was a tradition in the village my mom was from that carried on even after the revolution was over."
Taylor eyed the pan of dark chopped meat that Copano was gradually stirring into the rice. "Is that liver?"
"Shh, it's the secret ingredient," Copano replied, chuckling when Taylor wrinkled her nose. "Anyway, every Christmas, my mom would cook this and invite all the neighbors in our apartment building over to have some. My dad didn't like it. He'd forgotten the lessons of the hard times and would always complain. 'Why do I have to feed all these people, huh? These freeloaders.' But my mom did it anyway. And I think my dad secretly enjoyed having all these visitors he could brag to about his wife's cooking. It was fun. I liked having a full house back then. Everyone around."
"That's a nice tradition," Taylor said. But there was a creeping sadness behind her smile. She folded her hands between her legs and looked down at them. "My dad and I, we didn't do big celebrations like that. Didn't really invite anybody over. It was cool, though. He would buy all these frozen appetizers from the store, like real unhealthy stuff that we didn't normally eat, and we'd just binge on them all day and watch movies in our pajamas. It was kind of awesome, now that I think about it." Copano put a hand on her shoulder.
"It will turn out okay, Taylor. I promise."
Taylor nodded. She wasn't so sure. "It's hard to believe that place is gone now," Taylor said after a moment, swallowing. "Gone because of me, basically. I know my dad agreed to it, and I know it's for a good cause, but..." She shook her head. "He's staying with a cousin, sleeping on his futon. I hate to imagine that's what his Christmas is like." Copano put his hand on his heart.
"You have my solemn promise that when these Foundation people are brought to justice, I will return to South Dakota with you, and we will rebuild. As you already know, I am very strong."
Taylor snorted and wiped the back of her hand across her eyes. "I'll hold you to that." Copano put a lid on his vat of rice and stepped back with a satisfied exhale.
"This needs to simmer a bit. Come on, let's get some air."
Taylor hopped down from the counter, and the two of them headed out of the kitchen. As they went, she noticed Copano sneakily grab a small package from a shelf by the door. He tried to hide it behind his back.
Hey, what's that?
Still hiding the package behind his broad back, Copano turned around and walked backwards through the kitchen's swinging doors. He smiled sheepishly at Taylor.
This? It's a present.
Copano, what did you do?
Taylor followed him into the student union. The lights were still on, but the place was completely deserted at this time of night. After the heat of the kitchen, the cool air was a relief. The strings of blinking lights were reflected in Copano's eyes.
Before you say anything, you should know it was just dumb luck. I pulled your name for Secret Santa.
Taylor advanced on him, eyes narrowing.
But I didn't sign up for Secret Santa. We all agreed it wouldn't make sense with my jerk attitude.
Oh,
Copano replied.
Really?
Hmm.
Then I must have written your name and put it in the hat, which, was not the hat everyone else put names in, but one of Caleb's that I found in our suite. You know, I did think it was weird you were the only name in there, but I don't know how Secret Santa is supposed to work.
You are so full of it, Taylor replied with an incredulous laugh.
Copano finally stopped with the dopey excuses and held out the little box to Taylor.
Happy Christmas, he said.
She took it, eyeing the slapdash wrapping job he'd done, the corners all wrinkled and uneven. Guys never knew how to wrap presents.
I hope...
Now Copano's face was suddenly serious.
I hope I didn't overstep or something.
Taylor held up the box and shook it.
Why? What is it?
Open it. I'll explain.
Taylor ripped away the sloppy wrapping paper and revealed the small box within. She glanced up at Copano, who shrugged like he didn't already know what was inside. Taylor pulled off the lid. Inside the box was a small chunk of wood, dark brown, the edges sanded smooth. TC was carved into the soft surface, the grooves worn and darkened with age. The chunk of wood was wedged into the open side of a seashell. At least, that's how it looked at first glance. Upon further examination, Taylor noticed that the shell and the wood were melded together, the edges of the cedar at points seeming to grow right out of smooth shell. The whole thing was attached to a leather cord. A necklace. Taylor picked up the amulet cautiously, almost afraid she would break it. As she ran her fingers over her initials, she felt bumps on the shell's reverse side. She turned it over and found a delicate pattern of azure stones. Lorelite. The tiny shards embedded into the shell's light pink surface.
Copano. Wow.
She blinked her eyes, mouth open slightly. She traced her thumb over the initials, and the memory came back to her. The barn. A boring day in the summer a couple of years ago, and Taylor had secretly carved her mark into the wall. She'd felt guilty and stupid about it afterward, covered it up with bales of hay so her dad wouldn't notice. And as far as she knew, he never had.
How?
I did this, Taylor said, dragging her thumbnail through the carving.
This is from home.
Yes. So, I emailed your dad. I hope that's okay,
Copano replied, his nervousness unfeigned.
You emailed my dad, Taylor replied in disbelief.
Yes, he's very nice,
Taylor stared at him.
It was after you hatched the plan with Nine to have his people, you know, destroy the place. I thought, if that